Hello, everyone. Welcome to PageCast. My name is Shanipile Mzangwa. I'm with Jonathan Ball. So maybe we can go around, introduce ourselves so we can start.
I'm Laura Nathan, and I wrote a book about my son called Jamie Shy and His Superpower.
Hi, I'm Salamina Musese. I've written a book series. The first book, Disaster at Gogo's Plaza, and the second one is Cook Off at Gogo's Plaza.
My name is Rufile Muahlwedi. I've written a couple of books. Today, I'm going to be sharing All That I Am, which is a compilation. Yeah, very excited to be here.
And I'm Claudine Storwick. I work with deaf people, and I'm a lecturer at WITS, but I've started writing children's books, and Filbert Frog is the guy I'll be introducing you guys to today.
Great. Yes. Is this your first time being at Kingsmead? It's my first time. So. Yeah.
Yes.
Mutant. It's my second time only. Yeah.
Yeah. It's my eighth.
Yeah. You're a
veteran. Oh, wow.
I'm always a veteran at this festival.
Yeah.
And yet you look so young.
Yeah.
The young
Forever
veteran.
Forever young. I want to be.
Multi-talented.
Yes.
It's my first, and I'm very honored to be here.
Yeah. And how does it feel?
I'm very excited. I really want to share my story, and I do book readings at schools with kids, mm-hmm. and it really is about inclusion. So for me, this is such a fantastic opportunity.
Okay. Rufila, what are you looking forward to with regards to the fair?
Sure, I'm looking forward to dancing. So I'm sharing, it's a collection of songs and poems. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely not going to be reading it sitting down, no ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah, taking a trip down memory lane, the rhymes that we grew up with as kids that we want to share now with this generation and future generations.
Okay. Yeah. So your book celebrates multilingualism and cultural pride. Mm. What inspired you to center language as a bridge in your storytelling?
Because I really do in every book,
yes.
Right? My name is Rufile Muahlwedi, which is a very Sesotho name. My mother tongue, literally my mother, the language that my mother spoke, is Xhosa. So I have a strong Xhosa background, mostly I suppose because of my mother, but also I grew up in Mthatha. I grew up in the Eastern Cape. So that was my early kind of experience of who I am, very Xhosa background. But with this name and moving to Gauteng, it proved some challenging. It gave me some challenges. So there's always been a thing for me, I suppose, from a young age on having to explain myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I included so much in these stories because we have such a diverse country, multilingual country. I think if we take the stance of, as opposed to having to explain yourself, rather, let me share my story because we all have unique stories. So I weave that into the stories quite a bit because I guess there's a personal journey that informs that.
Yeah. So you've written both picture books and chapter books. How do you shift your voice and message when writing for different age groups? Also considering your Xhosa background and say Sesotho.
And bringing the Sesotho in,
yes,
as well. I think I have to step into whatever age that I'm writing for. So the children that I'm writing for, the age that they are, mm-hmm. When they're reading it, I have to go back to when I was that age. What are the things that interested me? What are the things that were important to me? Mm-hmm. So in the writing I do, I'm stepping back into certain phases of my inner child, depending on the message and who I'm writing for.
Okay. So you've mentioned that joy is a central part of your writing. How do you balance joy with important themes like identity, belonging, and resilience? Because your book explores that as well.
Interesting enough, the book just before this one, A Friend for All Seasons,
mm-hmm.
I describe the different emotions we feel as seasons. So, you know, I always say to the kids, what are the seasons outside, which everyone's familiar with? And then what are the seasons inside, which are plenty? And in going through that and in recognizing all the different seasons, the different emotions, we are saying there is not just one emotion. So even in the storytelling, a child will go through different experiences and feel different things. But what's beautiful about understanding them as seasons is that they change. They flow. We move from one to the other. And just like today, it's a warm day, but it's cold. Mm-hmm. It's factual. So even in the seasons inside, you can feel sadness. And then later on, you can feel happiness. So it's just creating an environment where it's comfortable for kids to move seamlessly seamlessly through the different seasons that they feel inside. And that comes out in the story. And then joy becomes this great reward because you know that it's coming. Even if you're in a season of sadness, we know seasons change. Mm-hmm. So it's coming at some point.
Do you think that the stories that you tell can transcend beyond just kids, or adult people can also resonate?
They already do. I mean, including myself. But I get so much feedback from parents, teachers, guardians, whoever comes across the book, because we all have an inner child that we're working with all the time.
Yes.
And I think these kinds of stories then touch that inner child and allow us to recognize that child and, you know, that they're still in us and we still experience all those emotions too.
Yeah. So your books are stocked in all schools and libraries across the country. What kind of feedback from young readers or teachers has stayed with you so far?
My biggest joy and reward in the work I do is when someone feels seen. Because when you feel seen, you can stand tall. You know, there are times that we feel like we have to carry whatever it is that we're carrying alone. But if in a book or in a story I've told, someone's like, oh, wow, that's my experience and my experience is valid. When we validate each other as human beings, it's we're building each other.
Yes.
And it allows particularly the children to be like, I matter.
Mm-hmm. So I grew up in a library. What I mean by that is that I didn't spend time with other people. All I did was just read, literally from when I was young. But what lacked is the stories that I could relate to.
Mm.
So maybe let me just ask, what is the last children's book that you read that you cannot recommend again to anybody?
You cannot recommend?
Yes.
Cannot?
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think there is one.
That's tough.
Do you mean you cannot recommend enough?
Yes.
Enough. Oh, okay. You cannot recommend enough. That's a different altogether.
I mean, we can answer both questions because there are books that we read that we don't like, that would never recommend to any other person. But there are books that we can recommend over and over again. So we can explore the two questions.
The Happy Prince is one of my favorite books ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I sob every single time I read it. So I haven't read it for a while because I've been in a winter season with sobbing, you know, as a menopausal woman. But I love a lot of the classic books.
Okay.
So The Happy Prince, I would say, is definitely one of my favorites.
Hmm. Here, Salamina?
You know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, sure, such a tricky question. But I think about 3 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
I decided to explore the Roald Dahl series again.
Mm.
As a child, when you said you grew up in a library, I was that child as well. And I like to, you know, when you discover an author for the first time. So obviously, a lot of the Roald Dahl books were a curriculum when we were growing up. And I think it opened a world for me that just sparked my imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And fast forward, I think probably by age 13,
mm-hmm.
I started in the TV industry. And I remember always thinking, wow, when I read the Roald Dahl books, I see these characters and they feel so alive to me. And whenever back then when I was dreaming of coming into the literature industry, I always thought, I want to write books with crazy characters so that anytime a child is reading them, they can feel like it's literally playing out in front of them.
Mm.
And even when I wrote my first book, I thought, disaster at Gogo's Puzzle. What could possibly happen at a Spaza shop where we meet these weird and wonderful characters coming in and out of Gogo's Puzzle, and then the children who live there, etc., etc. So for me, it's always been the stories with interesting characters, varying characters. I've always loved chapter books. I think really then my introduction to picture books, where I have to now read them to the kids, came when I became a mom. And it was interesting. Actually, my first picture book was yours, Refilwe's, reading it to my daughter, Dumi. And, you know, I think for me, really, it was for her to understand that there exists little children like herself, not far, here, there, all over the world, who are curious, who are interesting, who are interested in different things. And that's the world that we really want children to be opened up to. And that is really what is exciting even about the South African children's book space. I buy, anytime somebody releases a book, I buy it, because for me, I want my children's bookshelf to be filled with more local authors than international authors. And that has been an exciting thing for me. I think over the last, well, Dumi is 14 now. So we've been literally doing this for 14 years. And anytime we hear a South African book is out, we run to the bookstore. And it's really just about South African stories. It's about people that they are familiar with. It's about a context that we see constantly and that we should be celebrating.
So your books celebrate South African family life through a Spaza shop setting, which I absolutely love and I resonate with. But why was it important to tell a story rooted in everyday township culture?
I think I toyed with the idea of like a fantasy world, because that's just, you know, the kind of books that I loved growing up. And then I thought, at the time that I was writing my first book, Disaster at Gogo's Puzzle, it was COVID. Children were driving us parents mad inside the house, but they themselves, you know, they, Dumi needed a lot of stimulation. She was bored. She was reading a lot. Both my daughter and I are big, avid book readers. But I noticed that her, you know, as she got older, we had a lot of picture books. And then as she got older, I was struggling more and more and more to find chapter books for somebody of her age. And at the time, she was 10 or 9. And she was reading Diary of a Wimpy Kid. And I had always said to her, why do you like this book? Because I'd see her and she'd giggle and she'd read me a little extract and she liked the little pictures. And I thought, there aren't a lot of books like this in South Africa that celebrate our stories, our communities, etc. And the one of the most exciting periods in my life, in my own childhood, was growing up in Soweto with my paternal grandmother. She was extremely strict. We were only allowed to play in the yard. We felt a little bit like zoo animals sometimes because the kids who lived around the area would always peek in our house. They would hear us, but we weren't allowed to interact with them. And it was just crazy. But the only time we were allowed out of her yard was when she needed to go to the Spaza shop. So we would walk. And then it was, I mean, you can just imagine, everyone is so curious about our family. So we're walking with my grandmother to the Spaza shop. We get there and there's always a, it's those kids, you know. But what I then noticed is the Spaza shop is the hub of the community.
Yes.
And people are in and out. The Spaza shop, people always know everyone's business. But I loved that. And it just sparked my imagination as a child. And I understood then the importance also of the Spaza shop, because back then, that is where we bought our food most of the time. There wasn't a driving to the mall. My grandmother didn't have a car. You know, yes, she would take a taxi to the big shopping centers, but literally, most of our staples were bought at this Spaza shop. So when I had the idea to try and write a fun, lighthearted South African book that celebrates this gogo and her beautiful grandkids, I thought this Paza shop is a beautiful place where we can do many things. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you still a producer?
Yes, I am still a film producer.
Do you see your children's stories possibly being adapted for screen one day? If that happens, what would that look like?
I mean, I love the animation space, and I think that is definitely a space that's growing. What I wanted to do is I wanted to first have characters that are familiar to children. I think the best animations that we have seen, examples of them, have been of, you know, well-loved characters, the international Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, blah, blah, blah. So I think it's definitely something that's in my plans, future plans. But I think I'm really enjoying this book space and interacting with the readers. For the time being, that's really what I want to focus on.
Cool. Lara, what inspired you to write children's books? And how do your personal experiences shape your stories, the stories that you tell?
So that's a great question. So my son, Jamie, was born with cerebral palsy and was, he's the most incredible kid. So he's nonverbal. He doesn't have use of his muscles. And so he's wheelchair bound, but he is incredibly highly intelligent. And he actually communicates on an eye tracker, which actually speaks for him. So with his eyes, he actually controls the cursor and brings words down and creates sentences. And he can write storybooks. There are all sorts of games on this eye tracker. And he has been my greatest challenge and the greatest gift. And his smile lights up this world. It's absolutely infectious. When we're out, people see him smiling. They've often come up to us and said, your son has the most beautiful smile. There's something about his energy that is so beautiful. And I kept thinking, there were so many instances of even kids coming up to just hold Jamie's hand. Just so many special moments. And I thought, I wanted to express this. I wanted to put this out there. And it was very much also about inclusion and how he's not only changed our world. And, you know, we have a very different form of what we call, you know, this is our normal. Mm-hmm. But for other kids to understand special needs kids and be more inclusive of them and more aware of them and more engaging with them, because nothing makes my son happier than kids interacting with him. Mm. And even though he can't respond with words, he responds with his smile. That's, we can have the communication device with us, but it's a bit challenging with maneuvering if it's attached to his wheelchair. So it's mainly at home or at school. But it's been so rewarding. And you said something about the rewards. Mm. It has been the most rewarding experience of my life. And I wouldn't change it for anything, because he's here to teach beautiful lessons. And the name Shai actually means gift from God. And he really is just that. He's such a gift. And I wanted to share that story with everyone, kids, families, as far and wide as we can.
So how did the process of writing and the book help you navigate parenting and advocacy for special needs children?
It definitely made me realize that kids seem to be, I think it's more parents, and it's not intended, but, you know, sometimes kids would come up to us and say, why is he in a wheelchair? And then the parent, you know, and I would probably have the same reaction. Parents are like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, they must ask questions. Mm. We don't get offended at all. Ask the questions. You know, kids have inquiring minds, and it's up to us to teach them that it's okay to ask those questions. And it's the explanations that you give to them that make all the difference in their world.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did. Thank you so much for sharing. But I have another question that I wanted to ask. As someone who balances a high-profile real estate career and a television presence, how do you stay grounded in your mission to promote empathy and inclusion through literature?
Well, I definitely learned strength from my late mom, who was just such a strong, amazing woman. No matter what happened, she would she was just the kind of mom who would be in two places at one time. But that definitely taught me that no matter what's happened, and I've experienced a lot of loss in my life, tragically, my mom, my late mom, my late brother, my father died just before my wedding, all these things that happened along the way. And it really taught me such a love and appreciation for life, mm-hmm. and that we are here to make the most of it. And this is our opportunity to do and see and use your experiences and share that with the world in the most positive way. And through everything that happened, and we all have experiences, we all go through, if it shapes us into the people we become.
Yeah.
And what you choose to do with that, you can either be the victim,
uh-huh.
or you can use it to share it with the world in the most positive, beautiful way. And the rewards, as I say, that we see with my son and sharing the story and how kids respond to that is the most beautiful. It makes me emotional at times mm-hmm. when I'm with the kids, because it's so beautiful to see if you just give kids the opportunity to respond and understand and be more inclusive and kind.
How old is Jamie now?
He's 11. He just turned 11.
Wow.
And he's remarkable. And all he wants to do is be around kids. He doesn't get us. if there are kids playing soccer or the ball, even though he can't do that, he pulls the lip down as though he's going to cry. All he wants to do is go and be there. As long as he's there watching and a part of it, just to watch makes him so happy. If he's not near it, he gets upset.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes him so happy, is that his joy is so easy. It's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to be included.
Have you seen a shift in how children or educators respond to stories about differently abled characters in South Africa?
So I haven't seen too many. There's a book that somebody wrote about special needs superheroes.
Uh-huh.
Which I quite love the idea of. I don't think it's shared enough. I think, and that's why I've been on this mission as my little side hustle, just to go to the schools, to be out there, to share his story, to reach as many kids as possible,
mm-hmm.
and to encourage parents and grandparents to read the story, even though it's a children's story, but to read it and understand that the way forward really is to be far more inclusive. And I know I've said that a lot, but I can't say it enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to just add to you, because I look at inclusion as part of the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I make sure in the books that I write that these deaf kids, kids with wheelchairs, blind kids are in my book. And so I mainstream them, because I'm tired of always having to fight for inclusion. So it's kind of like we've got to make it normal in terms of the characters. So I'm a born teacher. I was born to teach and work with deaf people. And a couple of years ago, I thought, I just want to write a story for children. And so my characters are usually deaf, because I don't want, it's similar to the South African story. You know, you never see main characters like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
They're always other kids,
mm-hmm.
the white child, mm-hmm. the boy, and they're all regular. None of them are plump, none of them have got freckles, and none of them are deaf. And so my main characters are all funky kids, funky, different, so that when you look at it, you can see yourself in it. And so I love children's books. So I think like The Revolting Rhymes and Captain Underpants. I've got boys. I'm a boy mom. I just love. And so I wanted to write books that I would enjoy reading. And what inspired me was my teacher brain was really worried that kids were not developing enough vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
So vocabulary is impoverished. But I also wanted kids to read the book that are not typical readers. So you either love reading chapter books, mm-hmm. or like my sons, didn't really like to read. And so this is a search and find book. So you can get boys to look at it and search and find things, and then they can get enjoy the story. So I was hoping to kind of bring the non-reader into becoming a reader.
Mm. Ah. Yeah. What role does sign language or deaf culture play in your storytelling? And how do you make these accessible to young readers?
Yeah. So my other two books, the main characters were deaf.
Mm-hmm.
Fulbert is just a regular frog who's got some friends that are deaf. What you try to do is, like, sign language and deaf culture is just a 12th language in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So to normalize it, it's not like, oh my word, it's Zulu, Sotho, Xhosa, sign language, South African sign language. And what I like to do in the books is sprinkle South African culture into it. So there is a sign language interpreter on stage in one of the scenes in case there's a deaf person in the stage. So that's part of the deaf culture. Okay. But there's also boy culture. So there's a boy picking his nose. The names, I like South African names. And there's a bit of a spaza scene in one of the books where they're kind of queuing for the chicken. So I try and bring in so that when other kids in other countries read the book, they get to see things that they don't recognize but are interested about. So I try and normalize things as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how can parents and teachers better support deaf and hard of hearing children beyond the classroom? Mm-hmm. And how do books play a part in that?
So it's very similar to Lara. What she was saying is that it's normal. So I love it when children will go up to a deaf child and point at their hearing aid or point at their cochlear implant and just make it normal. Everyone to learn a little bit of South African Sign Language is great so that we know a little bit. Because ngisafunda isiZulu. So I've learned a bit of Zulu. I've got a Zulu name. Igama lami ngumobile.
Okay.
So to kind of learn a little bit of sign language and just be accepting of difference, not being scared of difference and not being scared of making mistakes. Deaf people are not as easily offended as us hearing people are.
Yeah. So children books often carry important messages. What core values or lessons do you guys hope young readers take away from your work?
Okay, so mine is definitely about adventure and fun. Knowing who you are starts with Gogo's house and then exploring, adventure, finding things, not giving up. If you can't find it, try again. And teamwork.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're feeling?
Mine, valuing and celebrating self.
In what way?
Well, a lot of the stories, whatever the topic is, I'll choose You Are Loved as an example, right? And I know a lot of the time we see love as something that we're waiting to receive from the outside. So a lot of these stories about it starts with you loving yourself and then moving towards outside. So it's a lot of inward reflection that's encouraged in the books. It starts with you. You start by celebrating your own culture, your own language, and then form curiosity for others.
Mm-hmm. And in my books, I like to explore themes like the strength of community, family, family bonds, and curiosity of children. There's, you know, the characters do naughty stuff, then they apologize. Mm-hmm. So it's also just to show kids that they can make a mistake, they apologize, they can be forgiven. And then just to understand that our stories matter.
Yeah.
And for me, a big one for me is kindness to everybody, especially those who are different. And we do like to say differently abled rather than disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And that every kid has a superpower in them. They just have to discover what that is and share that with the world.
Yeah. Thank you so much to everyone who has shared. I'm very inspired to read a lot of children's books, especially the ones that I didn't read when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to reading all your books as well. And hopefully we can share and promote the culture of reading with everybody else. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.